I've listened to Toulouse Street by the Doobie Brothers for years.
And I listened to it once yesterday.
Welcome to Spin It. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Spin It, the record ranking podcast for people who would rather be listening to music. I'm James, and with me is Connor.
What's up?
Not much. I'm just getting ready to talk about the Doobie Brothers. What's up with you?
Yeah, we're here to talk about Scooby-Doo and Scrappy-Doo.
No,
not
the
Scooby-Dumb.
Not the Doo Brothers. And... No, the Doobie Brothers.
Yeah, Scooby Dooby Doo.
No. Nope. How long did you have that queued up? That was pretty lame.
I had to get to the right tab where I had the Scooby-Doo family tree.
Gosh.
Apparently it's much more fleshed out than I thought it would be. You got the...
This is getting cut. I'm just telling you right now. Say it, because I'm curious, but I'm not going to start off the Doobie Brothers episode with the comprehensive Scooby-Dooby-Doo family tree.
You absolutely are, you coward.
Nope.
So you have Scooby-Doo, right?
Over the last year or so, I've become quite a fan of the Doobie Brothers.
Yeah?
I mean, my fandom started a long time ago. I got, through one means or another, I think it was like one of those blind mystery bags you get at record shops that has a bunch of records in there. You pay $5 and just see what you get. And some of them are good, some of them are bad. But one of them, I think, that I got was a Doobie Brothers Greatest Hits record.
Really?
Yeah. I love that record. And it's like a pre-Michael McDonald Doobie Brothers Greatest Hits. So it's stuff from Toulouse Street. It's stuff from The Captain and Me. Like, it's a lot of really good stuff. And one day last year, I saw the Doobie Brothers were coming to town in concert. And I was like, well, I gotta go. And so I started listening to other albums methodically, putting them on the albums of the month. And boy, oh boy, has it paid off. It's just been a blast. So I'm really excited for this week and every week, but this one too. But also, this was a week where I had a hard time picking an album. I was back and forth and back and forth. I mean, between a lot of them. And the two that I narrowed it down to were Toulouse Street, this one, and Minute by Minute. But we ended up here. You know, I felt like Toulouse Street has, first of all, three major Doobie Brothers hits. It's also got a lot more variety. The instrumentation feels a little more varied and stuff, but I think we might have to do a backtracks on Minute by Minute and just get a definitive answer so I know whether I was wise in my choice or not. What do you know from the Doobie Brothers?
Well, each week they...
Stop.
...solve another mystery.
It's not happening. You had your Scooby-Doo moment on the Halloween 13.
Sorry. So that was the mixtaper's Scooby-Doo moment, not mine.
Potato, potato.
This one's my Scooby-Doo moment. Anyway, I know who they are, but I don't think before this episode I could have named any of their songs.
Really? Not like Blackwater?
I don't think I knew that was them.
Okay, that's fair.
Like, or at least I couldn't have pulled it, you know?
Yeah, for a long time that was the only Doobie Brothers song I actually knew. And I knew it because, I mean, I distinctly, vividly remember driving to school, high school, in my first ever car with like a cassette player, but just the radio on an oldies station and hearing Blackwater at like 7 in the morning. It's like 30 degrees out. I'm cold. The Doobie Brothers are singing. So that at least made me happy on that bleak, dreary, awful morning. It's a great song. How did you know who they were if you didn't know any of their music?
It's just, I mean, they're a staple name. Who hasn't heard of the Doobie Brothers?
That's true. Nobody listening to this episode can say they haven't anymore.
It's true. I don't know. I just couldn't name any of their songs. They're older music.
A little bit. People who grew up with it would probably resent hearing that.
Yeah, well... Get over it, old folks. No. But I grew up listening to older music, so I'm sure I grew up hearing them.
Yeah.
Just couldn't name any of their songs.
I bet if we just put on a Doobie Brothers Greatest Hits and like shuffled it, you'd probably recognize a few.
I probably do. I do. There's a lot of artists and stuff like that that either have songs I didn't know was them, or I just couldn't have, like, if you said name songs by this artist, I would have blanked, right?
Yeah.
And not been able to think of it.
Yeah, that's fair.
But if you, like, gave it to me the other way, we're like, who sings this song? I probably could have been like, oh, so-and-so.
Maybe. I'm surprised that none of these resonated with you. Listen to the music, you're rocking down the highway, and, like, the biggies. I don't know. I would have thought those clicked.
I didn't say that.
Oh.
I said before this episode, I couldn't have said anything about them.
Okay. Yeah, true. Fair.
Well, after listening to the album, I recognize some familiar songs.
Okay. Good. That's great. Well, let's talk about them. Let's learn about the Doobie Brothers.
Let's learn. I don't know why, but whenever I hear of the Doobie Brothers, I think of the stupid Daggy Hoons from
the Barry Manilow episode.
Doobie and Daggy just sound like they go together.
No, they don't, though. Daggy was the slow, uncool music, and Doobie Brothers are not that.
Yeah, so they're like opposites.
Oh, okay.
Plus, Daggy sounds like Shaggy and, you know, Scooby-Doo. Anyway, tell me a little bit about the Doobie Brothers.
Okay, I'll tell you a little bit.
But not a lot. I don't want to know a lot.
You'll know a little. First things first, they weren't actually brothers.
Whoa.
Yeah, not even a single pair of them are brothers.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
I've been lied to.
Yeah, and...
been lied to my whole I'd say life, but like I didn't really know much about the Doobie Brothers until this episode, so I've been lied to for the last 24 hours.
Oh my gosh. The Doobie Brothers got their start out of San Jose, California in the late 1960s. Another classic California rock band. John Hartman, a drummer, left his home state of Virginia and moved way, way west to California, about as far west as you can go in the continental United States. And he was hoping to experience the rich scene of psychedelic music and culture. Obviously, San Jose, San Francisco, SoCal's like a big hub of counterculture in the 60s. In particular, John Hartman is hoping to meet Skip Spence, the former Jefferson Airplane drummer and co-founder and guitarist of one of his favorite bands, Moby Grape. Have you ever heard of the band Moby Grape?
Nope.
No, me either until this, but Moby Grape has been described as a band who could have had it all, but they ended up with nothing and less.
Dang.
So that just made me laugh. I was like, oh, well, darn, it sounds like they had a lot of promise and squandered it. But anyway, those are John Hartman's role models. Those are his musical aspirations early on. And bands like Moby Grape and Jefferson Airplane would continue to be big inspirations to the Doobies into their career. But he does go out and he does meet Skip Spence. Lucky for all of us, Skip Spence had a great musician connection in the form of guitarist and vocalist Tom Johnston. So he says, hey, you two need to meet, you two need to get together. And the two of them started gigging around San Jose. There's a little group called PUD, P-U-D, PUD.
That's an awful name.
It's pretty rough. I don't know where it came from or why they did it.
Hey, I want to go see PUD. Like, what?
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, you got to check out this new band that I just heard about. Their name is PUD.
Want to come to the PUD show tonight?
Oh, yeah, hang on. Now maybe I'm in. The PUD show is great. Welcome to the PUD show.
Yeah. Well, see, there you go. You just had to put it in the right context.
I'm back in on PUD.
You had to put it in the right context. In 1970, PUD starts to see a lot of potential for growth. They're like, what can we do to expand? So they bring on bassist Dave Shogren and guitarist and vocalist Patrick Simmons. They also really liked Simmons' finger-picking guitar style, which you hear plenty of on this very album. He kind of brings a new signature flavor to the group. Eventually, they did come to face the harsh reality that they just could not sustainably call themselves PUD. They realized it was not that appealing. But what to name themselves? They were kicking around all kinds of ideas, really just going through it. Couldn't pick until their pal Dino Rosen said, hey, I know you all like to smoke a lot of pot, so why don't you just call yourselves the Doobie Brothers?
That how they... He just said, you smoke a lot of pot?
Yeah, you smoke a lot of pot. You're bros. Why not be the Doobie Brothers?
Huh.
Yeah. It seems simple enough. And maybe like some kind of name they could have even thought up on their own. If, of course, they hadn't been smoking so much pot. But actually, they heard that name and they hated it. They thought it was a dumb name.
I mean, welcome to the Doobie Show. Not nearly as good as welcome to the PUD Show.
No. Yeah, it's true. But they were so out of touch with it. Like, Hartman hadn't even heard the term Doobie before.
That makes more sense. Okay. I was confused for a moment.
What?
Yeah. Carry on.
Okay. And their plan was just to use the Doobie Brothers name for a few gigs as a placeholder while they were transitioning from PUD until they could come up with a better one. And, well, as you can probably guess, they just never did. Or maybe they're still trying. Maybe they're still actively trying to come up with a better name than Doobie Brothers and just can't.
I think they should go back to PUD. I think they should give PUD another shot.
Mm.
PUD's grown some legs since 1970.
I can't believe no one else has done it since they've left the name.
Maybe they have the name parked, like a domain.
Oh, PUD.com. It redirects to the Doobie Brothers.
Hey, God. Oh,
what?
PUD.com redirects you to DistroKid.com.
Weird.
Interesting.
Maybe we should get SpinItPUD.com.
Hang on.
No, it's a joke. SpinItPod. That's going to be confusing.
www.spinitpod.com does not exist, but we should definitely park it and have it redirect, because then what if somebody accidentally typos spinitpod.com? It'll redirect them to our website.
That'd be ridiculous.
Maybe they should combine the two. Putty Brothers.
I don't like it. Putty. Pooty.
Pooty. They're the Pooty Brothers.
Oh, the Doobie Putters. That makes way more sense.
Oh, the Pooty.
This episode's a weird one. Anyway, the newly named Doobie Brothers started playing shows, and their music, with all its fuzz and its grit and its complex vocal harmonies,
all of its pud,
was a hit with biker gangs in the SoCal area, including Hell's Angels.
Oh.
Hell's Angels offered the Doobie Brothers kind of like a residency in one of their favorite venues.
Wow.
Yeah, so they started out as a biker band. The Doobie Brothers and their demos got so big so fast that by the end of 1970, Warner Brothers Records had taken notice and signed them to a contract.
Nice.
Yeah.
We should totally do that too.
What, become a biker podcast?
Well, just a music podcast for bikers. We need to get into the biker market.
Oh, yeah, we're biker friendly.
Yeah. If there's any biker gangs that want to pay us to come record the podcast where they can hear it, let us know.
Let us know. We can work something out. After signing with Warner, the Doobie Brothers' self-titled album came out in early 1971, and it wasn't exactly the same as what they were doing in their live shows.
They changed.
Yeah, they did.
Money changed them.
They sold out, man, for their debut record. Yeah. Instead of being this gritty, fuzzy biker rock, their first record was very country-inspired.
Oh.
It didn't really perform very great. It never charted.
Oh.
It didn't have any hit singles.
Hey, guys, I have a great idea. You know how we became famous for being fuzzy biker rock?
You know the music that our fans famously love?
Yeah, let's chuck that out the window and go country for our debut album.
Stranger things have happened. It is kind of a wild premise, but it was popular enough to send them co-touring all around the country. So it worked out a little bit.
Nice.
It was around that time they also had the idea that's kind of become one of their staples. They started incorporating a second drummer into their songs. So they welcomed Michael Hossack into the band to play drums alongside Hartman.
Nice.
Yeah. Gotta love a double drum. One more little lineup shakeup happened during this time. They were working on music for Toulouse Street, and they started to run into disagreements with Dave Shogren, and they replaced him on bass with Tieron Porter, who would be with the band up until the 80s, and occasionally after that. The Doobie Brothers are another band that kind of has a wide cast.
A ton of different members. Yeah.
So many.
I saw that.
And they're in and they're out. They were there for a while, for a couple years, and then they leave, and then they reunite and come back, and then they leave, and yeah, it's just really interesting. But that cycle gets started here in the early 70s. And then in the summer of 1972, the Doobie Brothers were prepped and ready for their groundbreaking sophomore record, Toulouse Street. And that, I mean, you can probably hear how it's a little country, but also rock. It's kind of a good blend of what they tried to do and what they were famous for. And actually, I mean, I think Toulouse Street really is the first full instance of what I would call the Doobie Brothers signature style. It's that like proto yacht rock, half southern rock niche that the Doobie Brothers occupy that you can see on Toulouse Street. It's really interesting. In addition to their newest members, Toulouse Street also features the work of longtime friend of the band pianist, Bill Payne. So again, it's just the band growing and expanding. You can hear a little piano a couple places on this record. It's nice.
Sure.
They actually named the album after a real street in New Orleans' famous French Quarter, about a block southwest of Jackson Square. Some of you, if you've been to New Orleans, have probably been on Toulouse Street. Think about that. One thing I didn't realize is that this album features 6 original songs and 4 covers. I didn't realize that 4 of these were covers because some of them have become pretty synonymous with the Doobie Brothers. Like, Jesus Is Just All Right, that's a cover, but I feel like almost everybody that knows that song associates it with the Doobie Brothers.
I sure don't.
No? Do you have another association for it?
Nope. Just didn't know that much about the Doobie Brothers.
Okay. Well, that doesn't count, I don't think. Seems like that was non-applicable. Either way, I think it's really interesting that one of their biggest songs is a cover. It's kind of fun. Other artists have done that. It's just always really interesting to find out that a song that you loved wasn't by the people you thought it was by. Toulouse Street was supported by 4 singles, Listen to the Music had the song Toulouse Street as its B-side. And then there was what I would consider kind of a double A-side of Jesus Is Just Alright and Rockin' Down the Highway. That's a pretty good, strong pair of singles.
Sure.
Toulouse Street charted at number 21 on the Billboard 200 in the United States, which again is a feat considering their last album's relative underperformance. It also charted in Canada, New Zealand, and Australia. So suddenly they go from small town unknown biker band to like international charting hit. Today, speaking of Doobie and Daggy being reminiscent of each other, I guess. Today, Toulouse Street is certified gold in Australia for selling 20,000 units over there. And that's pretty much the story with Toulouse Street, right? It's the first breakout success in a long, iconic career for the Doobie Brothers. This is like the foundation that they build the rest of their career upon. Future albums and future Doobie Brothers hits that I guess you may or may not recognize if you only know them nominally. You might know them if you heard them. But you got Long Train Running, you got China Grove, Clear as the Driven Snow, South City Midnight Lady. Those all come from The Captain and Me, which was also a tough choice for the episode. I was really considering it. There's Blackwater from What Once Were Vices, Now Are Habits. There's Taking It to the Streets, What a Fool Believes from Minute by Minute. I mean, tons of songs that I don't think maybe necessarily defined this era of rock, but absolutely all of them are solid, consistent pillars in the background of the stuff that was bigger in the moment of like the 1970s and 80s. I think the Doobies have a certain staying power that's maybe never at the forefront of music historically, but it's like always very near to the surface, in my mind anyway. But yeah, you know, I figured I'd save a lot of the rest of the specifics for, you know, if we do a Backtracks on Minute by Minute, then we'll have other stuff to talk about there. There's a ton of info out there about the Doobie Brothers' storied history. They have rubbed elbows with a lot of popular bands. And, you know, to mention the revolving door of people, they've worked with 14 official full-time members over the years, 24 touring members, and dozens more session musicians during their 54 and counting year career. So that opens a lot of doors. You know, you meet a lot of people when you work with like 60 people in the band. In total, the Doobie Brothers to date have released 15 records. They've also, sadly, lost a few members along the way. Dave Shogren, John Hartman, Michael Hossick, and Keith Knudsen, a longtime percussionist who joined after the release of Toulouse Street. They've all passed away, but the rest of the band is still going strong. They still tour all around the country, like I said. I saw them. They're great. Their most recent album, Liberté, came out in 2021, and current members, Tom Johnston, Pat Simmons, Michael McDonald, and John McPhee, have plans to release music possibly sometime even within the coming year. So that's really exciting. To date, the Doobie Brothers have sold more than 40 million records around the globe. They were inducted into the Vocal Group Hall of Fame in 2004, and in late 2020, they were finally inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as well. And recently, in 2023, Tom Johnston, Michael McDonald, and Patrick Simmons were nominated for the Songwriters Hall of Fame. But I don't think they ever actually made it to be inducted. So maybe in the future, who knows? They've also won 2 Grammys on 4 nominations, and both wins actually did come for Minute by Minute and What a Fool Believes. And I have to confess, I put both albums on today and I listened to them both. I really think I made the wrong pick.
Yeah, you think?
We'll find out at the end. I don't know. I just really am excited to do a Backtracks on this one because I think I might have messed it up. Not that there's anything wrong with Toulouse Street and I love it a lot, but yeah, we'll see. I was listening to both, thinking about what you would think about both. And there's pros and cons to each.
I am unknowable. I am an enigma.
Right. I know. So we'll see. Also, other little Doobie trivia tidbit, their most recent release was a single called Lahaina, and proceeds from the song went towards relief for those affected by the wildfires on Maui in 2023. Lahaina is actually the name of the town on the island that was particularly hit very hard by the disaster. The song also features Mick Fleetwood on the drums, so a little bit of philanthropy from the band lately. But that's what I got on the Doobies. I'm very ready to get that dubious dastard
that's
the mixtaper out here for another round of Factor Spin.
Man, so good at coming up with those.
Thank you. I'm particularly proud of that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish I had somebody that could just give me ideas like that so that I could make jokes like that.
You'll find someone.
If only I had a voice in my head. Anyway, let's get the mixtaper out here.
If only. Mixtaper, come on out. you're the next contestant on Factor Spin, but you're really not the next contestant. I guess you're the next host. Tell me some things about the Doobie Brothers, and I'll tell you whether they're Truebie Brothers or Doobie Spunners. I don't know. Okay. I should have just quit while I was ahead. Anyway, let's play.
Hey, it's me, the Mixtaper. Man, just didn't even give me a chance to introduce myself before you started just telling me it was time to play.
No, I was just
making really bad jokes.
I was just trying to get you hyped up. That's all. I was trying to be a hype man.
You like hyped me up and then immediately just steamrolled into like gearing up to play before I even got a chance to introduce myself. I feel rushed.
I start the episode geared up to play every week. I'm ready.
Feel a sneeze coming on.
A Chubby Brothers.
So I've got two facts this week.
What? Two?
That, well, hang on. Let me finish.
Oh, you just put a really big pause in there.
Stop rushing me.
I'm sorry. Take your time.
I've got.
Take a little less time.
Anyway, I've got two facts this week that you've already kind of alluded to.
Oh, that's fun.
Would you like to start with those? Wait on those? What are we feeling about those two?
Let's start with them while they're fresh on my mind.
Do you like me to go in the order you alluded to them, or
whatever order you think is best? Let's do opposite.
Opposite. Because you want the freshest thing first.
Sure. Yeah, the average freshness will be the same, but yeah, the freshest first. Why not? The ones that I've referenced are always the most dangerous to me because I'm always worried I'm going to like jelly baby myself and think that I know more about it than I do. Or you can like use what I've already said to build a really convincing lie. Like if it's a fact that builds on something I've said, I already know at least part of it's true. And that's what's scary.
So you talked about Michael Hossack.
Yeah.
And how he joined the band as a second drummer.
That's right.
But you see, he didn't really join the band.
No.
He was never an official member of the Doobie Brothers.
Oh. So he was like adopted.
I mean, kind of, right? I mean, he was brought in.
He wasn't in the Doobie family, yeah.
I mean, even if he was an official member, I think he wasn't even adopted, really, right? I mean,
like a Doobie stepbrother?
Yeah, not even that, because like then he'd still be part of the family, right? I'm saying he wasn't part of the family. I'm saying he was like the hired help, the Doobie babysitter.
Okay, so why not? What are the technicalities here? Did he go in knowing that he wasn't officially a Doobie brother?
Yeah, they signed him on as a contracted instrumentalist.
Ooh. They, I think, do that a lot. Don't they kind of run this like a business? And I think there have been squabbles in the past where they've had issues with ownership of the band and the name and the songs and who's contracted versus who's a member.
Yep.
I think I know about that getting kind of messy. But why not? Why not just bring him into the band? What are their reservations? Like, we've already got a drummer. Sorry, there's just no room in the actual band.
I mean, honestly, maybe. I can't speak to their motivations, but that would be my guess, is if they were like, oh, we want like a second drummer, maybe it was like, we're going to bring you on to just do some drumming when we need it, but we don't want you to be a formal member of the band. I don't know.
That makes sense to me. Or if they're considering members of the band as people who like get writing credits or contribute enough to songs, maybe they're like the secondary drum part like is good, but doesn't constitute enough of a writing credit to put you in the band officially. I don't know. There are a lot of options, a lot of reasons you could do that.
I don't know.
And he never gets full-fledged Doobie Brother status.
Nope. His full-time with the band, contracted instrumentalist.
I think this is a fact. I'm going to say this is Truebie. I'm sticking with that. Doobie Spunners was a bit much, but Truebie was really good.
This is a spin.
Oh, boo. You did just take him and like relegate him to contract employee status like so many of their other musicians, right?
Maybe. I don't know. I just kind of agreed with what you said when you said that you'd heard they had a lot of problems.
Yeah, I know.
I do know that. So originally what I was gonna do was I was gonna talk about Bobby LeKind.
Uh-huh.
He was a lighting guy for the Doobie Brothers. He like handled their lighting.
Lighting, like stage lighting.
Yeah, stage lighting.
Knowing the name Doobie Brothers, it could be a totally different kind of lighting.
Yeah.
He's our lighting guy.
Sorry, stage lighting. I mean, it just says lighting, man. Maybe it was both. I don't know what was in his contract.
That's true.
He eventually joined the band on percussion in 1979. And I was going to say that he was not a formal member, but then when I saw this part about you talking about the first person they brought in as the second drummer, I was like, ooh, let's use him instead, because James has talked about him, not just some random member.
Smart pivot.
Yeah.
It also doesn't help at this point that I've like deeply researched 142 bands.
Yeah.
So I've got a lot of facts about different bands swimming around in a lot of different places in my brain.
Sure.
Stories that I've heard.
Because we did talk about some other band that had a lot of problems with that. And I don't remember who it was now off the top of my head.
I mean, yes, straight up split in two.
Yeah.
And the Beach Boys, like, took the name and ran. Sure. Like, all kinds of inter-band quarrels have happened.
That's right. Anyway.
Shoot. Yeah, I'm a little disappointed in that one.
Yeah.
They've just played with so many members. It just seems logical.
Yeah. The other one has to do with their name.
You really?
Talked a lot about how they got their name.
Yeah.
I'm here to tell you, John Hartman didn't know that the term doobie had anything to do with drugs when they first picked the name. Which I know you kind of talked about how their friend Dino Rosen came up with the idea because of their pot smoking habits, but
yeah.
Hartman had no idea that that's what it had anything to do with.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I straight up mentioned that he had never even heard the term doobie before.
Well, I'm here to tell you, the band had told him it meant something different.
Yeah, he had the wrong definition of doobie.
Uh-huh.
What did he think it meant?
He was told that it came from the children's TV series Romper Room.
I've never heard of that. That must be old. What is it?
I knew you would ask that question.
Yeah.
Romper Room is a TV show that was on air from 1953 to 1994 and ran for 42 seasons.
That's a long time. We could have seen reruns of that in our lifetime, reasonably.
Yeah.
What is it? Like a variety show? Is there a plot or characters? Or
it's a children's program that was often franchised rather than syndicated, meaning local television stations could use their own hostesses in lieu of national hosts that they chose. A typical program featured a group of 6 to 10 children ages 4 to 6 in a variety of games, songs, and rhymes, and simple moral lessons as guided by the hostess and recurring characters.
So like Zoom.
One of those recurring characters was Mr. Doobie, an oversized bumblebee who helped teach the moral lessons.
What?
Do be a good sport when you lose. Things such as that, like do be this.
Okay. You said he's a giant bumblebee?
Yeah.
Okay.
The end always featured the hostess using the magic mirror to help greet the show's young audience. But yeah, that's kind of what it was.
And so he came into this naming exchange. First of all, if I didn't know it was true, I'd have a hard time believing he didn't know the term doobie as an aspiring hippie musician in the late 60s who's like a fan of Jefferson Airplane. That's already unbelievable. But you're saying they said, let's be the Doobie Brothers. And he genuinely thought that they were trying to be the kid show Giant Bee Brothers?
Well, that's just where they took the name Doobie. They liked the name Doobie.
Hmm.
And I mean, he had good reason to think this because they said so in interviews.
Really?
Yeah.
They like claimed that?
Yeah. When they first started, you know, they didn't want to tell everybody that they named themselves after drugs. So
no.
They would say that they came up with the name based on the character from the Romper Room. And so he just thought that's what it was until he realized it was about drugs.
That's so wild.
But is it true? That's what we're here to find out.
There's no way. I feel like there's no way his friend can frame the name as like, you guys smoke so much, you should be the Doobie Brothers. There's no way he can go, is he talking about that bee guy from the kids show?
No, I don't think, no. I don't think he just came up with that himself. I'm telling you that like when they came up with the name, they started promoting it that way. And so when he heard that, that's what he assumed the name came from. He wasn't just on his own going, man, Doobie Brothers. Doobie's the name of the bee from that children's show. Like, I don't think that's how he did it.
Oh.
Like, that's insane.
It is. It is. That's why I'm struggling with this.
I'm telling you that, like, they promoted themselves as being named from that, and he thought it was true until he later found out from Dino Rosen that, no, he came up with it because it's a slang term for drugs.
So he, like, hypothetically misses the name meeting. They come to him and say, Pud's no good, but we have this silly in-betweener name, the Doobie Brothers, for the meantime. And he's like, sure, I'll go along with it. Wonder what that's about. And then they start doing interviews and say, it's the bee from the show. And he doesn't figure out that it's a joint until when? When does he clue in?
Whenever somebody breaks the news to him, probably Dino Rosen. I think I'm not there. I mean, you're framing it in a very ludicrous way, but
there's no way that's not ludicrous.
If I had to put it in my hypothetical less ludicrous way, maybe it happened more along the lines of Dino Rosen who came up with the name was like, Doobie Brothers would be a good name. The band was like, that does have a good ring to it. And
they just had to figure out what's a doobie.
Well, I mean, I'm sure some of them knew, but like, I'm sure it was just probably not spoken. They probably just assumed everybody freaking knew what a doobie was, right? Because how do you not if you're that big into drugs?
Right.
As you said, they probably just assumed everybody knew it. And Hartman didn't. And then when they started telling the lie, he just assumed that's what it meant. Is a maybe less ludicrous way that could possibly have gone down, but I don't know. I'm just telling you.
I don't know.
The fact that I, the mixtaper, am giving you, that you have to determine is true or false, is did Hartman find out after the fact that the doobie was drugs and thought it was based on the bee because that's what they'd said in interviews.
Okay.
Everything else is just me posturing it, maybe yeah. how it happened in a less ludicrous way than you came up with.
Right. Right. I think this is a spin.
This is a spin.
Yeah, I'm going to go with this not being true.
Sure.
Even if he doesn't know what a doobie is, which is fair. I don't know if there's any way that you go under that name for any amount of time and not figure it out. Like, even if the name is suggested to you and everyone goes, okay, wouldn't you go, well, what's that mean? What's a doobie? And
I don't know.
Then someone surely would be like, oh, it's drugs.
It depends on how high I am, I guess.
Fair. I think what happened here is you just found out about this curious kids show and the doobie, and I think you just wanted to make that work. Or maybe they really did say it in interviews, but it's also, I just don't think it lines up that he would not know that.
So lock it and spin.
Yeah.
This is a spin.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Good.
But it's mostly true. I turned it into a spin based on what you had in your rundown. Everything was true up until I said Hartman didn't know.
Yeah. Yeah. See, that's it.
They absolutely claimed in the earlier days that their name came from the children's show, especially on the more straight-laced radio publications that they'd be on to like promote themselves. And when they'd get asked, how'd you come up with your name?
Yeah.
That's the story they told.
We're the friendly good advice bee.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
So that was all true. I thought if I framed it that way, you'd be like, yeah, that's probably true. And so I wanted to find a way to make it a spin.
Well, the logistics, that's what complicated it beyond the point of no return, because the logistics of him not finding that out like really threw a wrench in everything.
I don't know. I think that wasn't as ludicrous as you kept making it. I think there was definitely situations where at least you go maybe a couple weeks without realizing it, enough to have a radio interview happen.
Maybe.
I mean, people don't like to admit what they don't know, right? Especially amongst their friends where they want to be cool, right? So
that's true.
He absolutely could have just not been like, hey guys, what's a doobie, when it seems like everybody else knows. He's like, oh, I'll figure it out later, you know, on my own.
I'll Google it in 1971.
That totally could have happened. I think it's not as ludicrous as you.
I also don't think he was the right age to watch this kid's show.
No, but I mean, they were the right age to know it existed, apparently, enough to lie about it in interviews.
Well, sure. Interesting. We got some Doobie Brother lies to start the round off. I love that.
Indeed. Now some unalluded to, supposedly true facts. Would you like them in the order you did not allude to them?
Yeah.
Or the opposite order you did not allude to them?
So far, I'm 50-50. I think let's stick with the opposite order that I did not allude to them.
Okay.
Freshest first.
They beat the Beatles.
With bats? Or
with doobies.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean the giant bee from the TV show, not drugs.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they whacked Ringo with a giant bee. In what way did they beat the Beatles? We talking some kind of record?
Yes.
What record is that?
Fastest sellout show.
Oh, interesting. Like, was it a particular show? Like a one-off or part of a tour? Where was it? What was it?
I think it was a one-off. I mean, it was like a reunion.
Okay. When did this happen?
In 1986. Or no, sorry, 1987 was the concert.
Okay. Well, but it probably opened for sale maybe in 1986. Depends on when.
Well, in 1986, the Los Angeles Times polled a bunch of fans, and the Doobie Brothers were the band the readers most wanted to reunite. Second place going to Led Zeppelin.
Oh, that's wild.
Uh-huh.
That's really wild.
I mean, maybe it's all a lie. Who knows?
Maybe.
And they then got back together in 1987 to play a benefit concert for the Vietnam Veterans AIDS Foundation. And it was the fastest selling show ever. I mean, at the time, broke the record, which was last held by the Beatles in one of their mid-1960 concerts.
Yeah. I believe that bit of it, because the Beatles were not big on touring. I mean, we talked about how they did their last show in like 1966, barely halfway into their career, and then they just stopped. And concerts were not as big of a deal back then. I mean, the Beatles were a big deal, sure, but definitely concerts as an industry took off with, like we talked about, Kiss and their big stage shows and like that era.
And the reason I said it was kind of a one-off thing is because that then led to them making a new album that came out 2 years later in 1989, the album called Cycles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think people would show up for a reunion tour, especially a reunion tour that's a benefit tour.
Yeah, sure.
A reunion is a big draw already. Like, what if they never come back again, and this is the one chance you have to see the apparently most missed band in the world, the Doobie Brothers?
More missed than Led Zeppelin.
Apparently. Can you just, like, guarantee that it's not false because the Doobie Brothers weren't the most missed band? That's the only thing that's got me.
No, I cannot confirm that.
No? Okay. Well, I think it's true.
Oh, okay.
Otherwise, I think benefit concert, Vietnam, AIDS, all the things you said, sure, makes great sense. The Doobies reuniting makes good sense. Concerts were way bigger. Ticket sales were way different and probably more accessible.
More accessible?
You know, in the 1960s, what do you do? Go to a box office?
I don't know. Is a box office more accessible than being able to buy a ticket right on your electronic device in your pocket?
Well, clearly that's closer to possible in the 1980s. I mean, obviously not possible then. And the record's since been broken, right? So that's a moot point. Yeah, obviously it's going to sell out faster now when people are in massive queues to get Taylor Swift Eras Tour tickets. The record's long gone.
Yeah.
But I think the Doobies had the title for a bit, so I'm going to say it's Troobies.
Troobies for the Doobies.
Yeah, another fact.
This is a spin.
Darn it. Why is it a spin?
Led Zeppelin wasn't second place. No, I'm kidding. Could you imagine if that was why it was a spin?
I would be so mad.
That would have been so mean. Oh, man. Led Zeppelin was second place. Doobie Brothers were number one. As shocking as that is.
Kind of is.
But they didn't beat the Beatles. They just took second place right behind the Beatles. The Beatles were still faster, but they were the closest thing to come to beating it since the Beatles said it.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah.
Either way impressive, but less impressive that they still couldn't beat a 20-year-old record. That's wild.
So now it all comes down to this. Last one.
Yeah, it does. You've been lying this week.
I have been lying. I've been a little liar. I've been a little spinner.
Mm-hmm.
This is for the 50-50 or the win here.
Yeah, I guess so.
This one I've titled Rocket Scientist Skunk.
That's it? It's just three words? Rocket Scientist Skunk?
Yeah.
Okay. True? Am I supposed to say true or false to Rocket Scientist Skunk?
Well, I mean, you can if you don't want to ask any questions.
I don't know. I don't know where to begin. So this is clearly not about a rocket scientist who is a skunk. What's it about?
It is about how the Doobie Brothers are rocket scientists.
I'm going to have to do a little more digging. What kind of rocket science are the Doobie Brothers doing?
Ballistic missiles?
Like ICBM kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Those are rockets. How are they doing missile science? Are they building missiles?
Well, one of their members, Jeff Skunk Baxter, became a self-taught ballistic missiles expert.
That's a hard thing to teach yourself, I think. There are way easier things to teach yourself. Why did he do this?
Because he's fascinated with ballistic missiles.
Sure. They're fascinating. Does he do anything with that knowledge? Does he just know it to know it? Or does he, like, have some really questionable hobbies?
Well, he's since gone on to chair a congressional advisory board on missile defense.
Chair an advisory board on missile defense. What advice does he give?
I mean, advice on ballistic missiles.
Sure.
And their use in defense.
Yeah, that's wild. We've had other miraculous self-taught people before. I mean, the Jizza was a physicist, right?
He, like, did science.
He did quantum physics.
Quantum physics knowledge.
And lectured at Harvard.
Yeah.
So I'm very open-minded to the possibilities, I suppose.
Sure.
I think this is true. I think it's an ambitious thing to maybe lie about if it's false. But you don't just lie about ballistic missiles. That's got to be some kind of, like, legal trouble, right?
I don't know.
I don't know. I think it's true. I think this is the one fact that you've got.
Okay. Well, I had one other detail. I don't want this to change your answer, but I got one other detail I want to say.
But it might change my answer.
But don't let it change your answer, you know. I didn't say Jeff Baxter was a... Well, I mean, I did say he was a ballistic missile expert, but I didn't say he alone. I said the Doobie Brothers were rocket scientists, right?
Yeah, that's true. But you did just say rocket scientist skunk, so that kind of does imply the one.
Well, that's because they weren't all nicknamed skunk, and I just really wanted to throw the word skunk on there.
Sure.
To really confuse you.
Right.
Well, I mentioned he was doing all of this while being a member of the band, right?
Yeah.
And so he got them to come do a performance at one of the advisory board meetings.
What?
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like it has any place at an advisory board meeting.
Yeah, a little live entertainment. I mean,
I don't believe that for a second, but the rest of it.
I knew it was going to make you want to change your answer. Maybe I should have just waited till after the fact to tell you that, but I've said it. Don't let it change your answer, but do what you must. Lock in an answer.
Here's the annoying part, though. You're game theorying me now, because you know that I said fact, and you knew that this was going to make me doubt that it was a fact. So the question is, did you bet on me sticking to my guns and lie? Or did you bet on me not believing this last piece of true information and switching my answer?
I don't know. That's the question you have to answer.
I think you bet on me hearing that live performance at a congressional advisory board meeting. I bet you banked on me hearing that, not believing it, and expecting you to throw in false information at the end to turn something I thought was true into a lie. So I'm going to stand by fact. And I think...
Standing by Truby.
Rocket Scientist Skunk is Truby.
Locking in for me.
I'm locking in a fact.
This is a spin.
It's the performance.
Oh, yeah. It's absolutely the performance. Yeah.
I knew the rest of it was true. I know the rest of it was a fact. And so...
I went into this, if he is leaning true, add this detail about them performing. He will think you're adding this information to turn it into a spin. But then he'll also think that you knew he would think that and choose to stick with true.
It's just so stupid.
I reverse psychology'd you.
It's just so stupid that it would never happen. It would never happen. I knew, like, genuinely was just humoring you by asking questions about the first part.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, man.
And I knew you would second guess yourself and be like, oh, I bet he would think that I would think that, and therefore this is true, and I'm gonna stick with true. I knew you would do that. I went one level deeper.
I'm so annoyed. But for the record, he really is the head of an advisory board to, like, the United States Congress.
It was.
Yeah, right. Obviously, time marches on.
Yeah.
But
he was also a member of Steely Dan before joining the Doobie Brothers, apparently.
Yeah, but so is everybody. They are very closely related bands, is what I found out.
Yeah.
When I was looking into Michael McDonald, because I love him. What a guy. But we can't talk about him on this album. He's not on this album. We'll do a Michael McDonald album in the future. Don't you worry. And it may or may not be with Steely Dan.
Well, all I've got to say is maybe next time you won't rush me. And maybe I won't have to game theory you like that.
I didn't mean to.
I won't have to put you in your place.
I don't know about Russian, but it seems like you took a lot of time to prepare, so.
That's what I always take this gig very seriously.
You do. I just mean, I don't.
Except for when I make up stuff on the spot, just to see if I can get it past you.
Right. I was just saying, I don't think you were very rushed at all in creating that fact.
Oh, right.
They were all four very carefully constructed, unrushed, well thought out facts.
Yeah.
Well, lies. Not one of them was true.
In a way, they all had truth to them. I felt like turning truths into lies this week.
Yeah.
It was a corruption kind of week, corrupting the truth.
Well, I'm ashamed to say that it worked.
But that's just because I'm so dubious. First person to make that joke.
Oh, you spun it back on me. Yeah. Good job. I should have doubted you more, actually.
Well, until next time.
Did you say yeah?
Don't rush me! Yeah.
Okay, there it is. Dumb joke. I did not expect it. Welcome back, Connor.
Hello, I am back. You got game theory. You took a whole class on that, too, in college. Can't believe you fell for it.
I was not the best at it.
Oh.
I mean, taking a whole class doesn't necessarily mean much.
More than most people.
Yeah, I'm pretty disappointed in how that shook up. Let's talk about the album cover of Toulouse Street.
Do it.
The photo on the cover is, of course, those brothers Doobie. It was taken, actually, on location on Toulouse Street. And it was taken at a former brothel.
Oh, really?
And when I say former, I mean former when they were taking the picture, not former now. It's also former now.
Oh, but so it was not a brothel when they took the photo.
Right.
Gotcha.
It kind of reminds me a little bit of the band and their Brown album, except this picture's in color, and it takes up a little more of the face of the record. Plus, look at the font. Really cool text. And the coloring, that crimson.
Yeah, I like when the font's great, but I also really like the, like, picture frame look of it.
Yeah, it's nice. The little edge to it.
Yeah.
It's really classy. I honestly, it does give pretty strong New Orleans vibes, which is great for this album. I think it kind of echoes a lot of those in its songs and lyrics in some places. definitely that Southern rock feel to it. But without further ado, let's talk about these 10 tracks.
Yeah.
Let's hit it. Up first, fittingly, Whoa, Whoa.
Listen to the Music.
Listen to the Music.
Yeah, and as soon as I hit play on this, I was like, oh, yeah, Doobie Brothers.
There it is. See, you knew. I knew you knew this one.
That's why when you were like, how did you not know any of it? I was like, I didn't say that.
No, you clearly.
If you had said name a Doobie Brothers song, I could not have said, oh, Listen to the Music. But as soon as the song started, I was like, ah, yes, I like this song. This song comes up a lot on my classic rock playlist.
I figured it would. Again, as a classic rock listener, you just couldn't have not heard the Doobies.
No, and that's why I was like, I know who they are. I just couldn't. That's part of the problem with my singles listening habit, right? Mm-hmm. Is I hear a lot of songs that I like and have no idea who sings them.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that opening riff hooks you right away. I mean, you instantly know it. You instantly love it. Tom Johnston actually wrote that riff in the middle of the night. It was like just restless and awake. And he played that guitar part and he was so excited that he called producer Ted Templeman and woke him up in the middle of the night to play it for him over the phone. And he was like, yeah, that's great. Good job. Is that it? Can we do this tomorrow?
Could this not have waited till the morning?
Can we do this any other time but now? And then he went back to bed. But that is it. The song was written by Tom Johnston. Vocals by Johnston himself, Pat Simmons. And Listen to the Music was really the Doobies' first huge single. It charted at number 11 in the US and 29 in the UK, where it's certified gold. And in fact, it was their very, very first of what would go on to be 16 top 40 hits stateside.
Nice.
Yeah.
This is probably the closest we've come in a while to some Owos.
Yeah, I think so. Owo, Listen to the Music. I think it actually counts as a bona fide Owo. It's in there.
There's an Owo in there. It, technically, the lyrics say that it's wo-ho-ho, which would not be an Owo. But the way they say it definitely sounds like a wo-o-wo, which means the second half of that phrase would be an Owo. They just tack a wo in front of it.
Right.
So I think it counts as well.
It's such an upbeat song. It's got every other song on this album beat by hundreds of millions of streams.
Popular song. Heck, it's their most streamed song on Spotify.
Yeah, no question as to why.
The other members of their top five is Long Train Runnin', which is another one I now realize I know.
Oh, absolutely you do. Come on.
Again, just couldn't have named it. What a Fool Believes,
mm-hmm.
China Grove,
yep.
And Black Water.
Yep.
Are their top five streamed.
Some of the best, man. And they all come from different albums. You see, oh, yeah. I had such a hard time. I was like, man, we could talk about Listen to the Music and Rockin' Down the Highway and Jesus Is Just All Right, or we could talk about Black Water, or we could talk about Minute by Minute and What a Fool Believes, or we could talk about Long Train Runnin' and Clear as the Driven Snow and China Grove. Like, ah, it was tough. Johnston said Listen to the Music is about world peace. It's a call for world peace. He said, the chord structure of it made me think of something positive. So the lyrics that came out of that were based on this utopian idea that if the leaders of the world got together on some grassy hill somewhere and either smoked enough dope or just sat down and just listened to the music and forgot about all this other BS, the world would be a much better place. It was very utopian and very unrealistic. It seemed like a good idea at the time. And it is such a happy, hopeful song. It's a great way to open up this album with a real feel-good track. Don't you feel it growing day by day?
I do feel it growing. I like this song. It's good.
Isn't it? I also like the next song, Rockin' Down the Highway,
yep.
Has earned the spot of like the next most popular song from this album. And this is one where I can really kind of tell they started out as a biker band.
Yeah.
A little bit. Rockin' Down the Highway feels like a biker band kind of song. Once again, written and sung by Tom Johnston. This was the B-side to Jesus Is Just All Right. And even though it's kind of gone down as one of their greatest hits, it got lukewarm, slightly positive reviews from critics at the time, which is funny. I just don't understand how you hear it and not love it.
By being lame.
Yeah. Johnston said, I think I'd had Rockin' Down the Highway, those chords, for maybe 2 years. I just hadn't written the rest of it. I had that before the Doobie Brothers even started, probably back in the Pud days. I bet he was working on Rockin' Down the Highway.
Ooh, back when they were Pudding.
Yeah, just Pudding along. He said it just never turned into a song. Eventually, I put in the rest of the chords, which are pretty straight-ahead stuff, and turned it into what it became. As for the lyrics, Johnston said, it's a good times song. It's just what it sounds like. It's about being in a car with the top down, flying down the road, which was not uncommon. He said, I lived in San Jose, but spent a lot of time in the Santa Cruz Mountains, and driving up and down Highway 1 down by Santa Cruz. He said, you know, we hadn't signed with a label at that particular time, and I would imagine the words came out of those experiences. It was footloose, fancy free, and just grooving up and down the coast partying. What a great song.
It's pretty good.
A lot of woes, though. I mean, both in Listen to the Music and Rockin' Down the Highway, we have a sustained woe.
I like woes.
Well, don't like them too much. They don't really come back much on this album.
Well, that's not gonna make me love them any less. It's only miss them when they're gone.
Yeah. I want to talk about their vocal harmonies, too.
Okay.
That's the thing the Doobie Brothers are really big on.
Yeah, they have a good sound.
Tight, tight, like 3- and 4-part vocal harmonies.
Well, I guess, did they mainly replace instrumentalists? Because they had a lot of lineup changes, but I feel like their sound...
They did. A lot of the vocalists stay consistent. I mean, aside from notable additions like Michael McDonald, they definitely keep a lot of that same vocal harmony. Like, that's a priority for them, no matter how their sound evolves. Because, you know, it starts here with this, like, country southern rock, and then they push past that into a more straightforward rock, into almost more of a, like, a pop rock with Minute by Minute. Like, their sound continuously evolves and changes, but some core elements of it stay the same, like interesting chord structures and tight vocal harmonies and dual drums. A lot of big Doobie hallmarks. But they show their head early. It's been a while since we've had an album with really good vocal harmonies, and just something about it just hits right. Feels good.
We don't do as many bands, I feel like. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong about that statement, but it feels like we do more solo artists on this podcast. And like when it is a band, it's still just like one lead singer. We don't do a lot, I guess, of bands that have like a harmonizing sound.
It's true. It's because I think they're rare.
Could be.
It's hard to do and hard to do well. And I think the Doobie Brothers obviously do it, and they obviously do it well. They do be harmonizing.
See? Totally plausible that they were named after that children's show B.
I don't know about that, but plausibly plausible. I didn't believe it.
Fair enough.
What did you think about Mama Loey? I'm guessing probably the first one you didn't know.
Correct.
This one was actually not a Tom Johnston write. This one was written by Simmons. Pat Simmons wrote this. Johnston still did the vocals. Mama Loey is this weird... And I don't want to call it weird, like it's just unique and different. It's a blend of like rock and reggae. It's definitely a rarity among music, period. Not just the Doobie Brothers or not just this record.
This one, it felt to me like they had the idea of like, hey guys, what if we record this song and have the singers stand across the room from the microphone while they sing?
Like they're far away.
Yeah, they sound like... I kept like wanting to turn the song up because I was like, that sounds so far away. It sounds so quiet. But then like the instruments were louder still.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be honest, I'm kind of inclined to believe that's intentional. I mean, the lyrics are all about being far away from home and trying to call back to someone who's going to take you away. You know what I mean? There's this sense of longing and distance there innately. But they do sound kind of far away and echoey. I think they do a good job at capturing that kind of Caribbean vibe, though, which is really interesting. It's kind of a third example on this album. I think the first two tracks have done it really well, too. But the music kind of shows us what the lyrics tell us. We hear these Caribbean rhythms happening as they sing Gotta Get Back to Jamaica, right? Whereas like Rocking Down the Highway, we can hear that energy, the top-downness of the car. And listening to the music, we hear that hopeful, peppy melody as they sing, just listen to the music, get happy. Like, the Doobie Brothers do an excellent job at matching the vibe of their lyrics and their music.
Yeah, I just struggled to get into this one because the rhythm was good. It was like a cool rhythm that like you said that like Jamaican vibe flow rhythm to it.
Yeah.
But because of the faraway vocals, I kept focusing in on that. And then it was like hard for the vocals to go anywhere. It felt stagnant vocally because of that effect.
Well, that's fair.
Whether it was intentional or not.
I just like this song for the guitar work.
Of course you do.
I know. A lot of interesting bits in there too. But the percussion is also really great on Mama Loey. So there's a lot to love. But it's short, which is nice if you don't think it builds any and is stagnant.
If you want to talk about guitar work though, tell me what you thought about the beginning of the title track.
That's right, Toulouse Street, track 4. It's beautiful, genuinely. I mean, I talked about, you know, they brought on finger picking and incorporated that into their sound. Nowhere is that clearer than Toulouse Street and like Snake Man, but It's just so pretty. I like the way that they play with stereo on this. You know, you get a little in the left ear, a little in the right ear, and that makes the whole experience kind of haunting to listen to Toulouse Street.
Also, they have talking about their vocal harmonies, they have a really nice hit on the line, I Just Might Pass This Way Again. Right before, specifically the one right before the night She Is Hot, Creole Girls They Sing, which is a weird line.
Yeah.
But they take it a down, slightly minor. I don't know what to call what they're doing, but it's... It's good.
It is really good. This one was written and sung by Simmons. He gets both credits here.
Also, what instrument is that in the instrumental break?
Ooh, a flute?
I thought flute, but like flute in the low register.
Yeah.
I guess. Instead of the higher register, you're used to a flute.
Flute rock is a whole beast of its own, and it's really intriguing.
Yeah.
I like it.
I like it.
And I think it fits this song really, really well.
I was just afraid I was misdiagnosing the flute, because usually I'm used to hearing flute in a higher pitch.
No, that's it.
Okay. What is the night she is hot Creole girls they sing? What is that? What's happening there?
The night
she is hot?
It's personifying the night. The night is like a woman. It's a hot night.
Oh! The night.
She's hot.
She is hot.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And then Creole women sing because they're down in
gotcha.
New Orleans and Louisiana. And
I took it as like saying that they were describing the night, some she.
Like a particular night where somebody is, no.
It's hot. Yeah, I was like, that's like what?
It's personification. I understand the confusion. But boy, this song also, I mean, this is an interesting contrast here because Mama Loey has that acoustic feel and the echoey vocals. But I think Toulouse Street does a better job of supporting it instrumentally, where this one doesn't feel stagnant. It lasts for a minute longer than Mama Loey, but I think it's got a lot better ebb and flow to it.
I would almost guess I would put Toulouse Street in my upper 50% of title tracks.
Really?
If you were to take every title track we've ever done.
We've done a lot of title tracks.
And ranked them. I'd put it in the top 50% at least.
That's impressive. It's captivating. What did you think about Cottonmouth? This is one I heard those horns come in and I was like, oh, this is a good bet. Connor might like Cottonmouth a little bit.
Yeah, as predictable as you are about good guitar parts, you can bet if there's horns, I'm interested.
Yeah, this is the first cover of the album, the first of four, and it comes at track five. So as you can see, most of the back half of the album is going to be covers. But this one was written by James Seals and Dash Crofts. The same duo, by the way, that wrote the song Summer Breeze and some other hits. You know Summer Breeze, right?
Oh, yeah.
This is by the same people that wrote that.
Oh.
Yeah. Tom Johnston's vocals are back. He gets to sing this one. The original release by Seals and Crofts came out on their second record Down Home in 1970. So just a couple years before Toulouse Street got to it. I think this song has such a groove to it.
It does.
It almost is like a precursor to the kind of like funk that we see emerge later in the 70s, a little bit. Obviously with a little more of a rock edge, but I can definitely hear those tendencies.
I have a bit of my mind goes to a place of like this song being the song playing in the background while somebody that's cool walks down the street and is like saying hi to people and giving them the finger guns.
Yeah.
And they're like kind of got that pep in their step as they're walking down the street, kind of bobbing their head a little bit.
I can hear it. I can see it.
Like they can hear the music, but nobody else can.
Everyone needs to listen to the music. Yeah.
And they have a really dry mouth while they're doing it.
Cotton mouth. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's obviously some more great instrumental work in this. Past the horns, there's a wicked instrumental guitar solo at like 150, 2 minutes. Excellent. But funny as it is, you know, I like Cottonmouth. I don't think it makes my top five.
Really?
Yeah, and I like it a lot. It's just that there's so much good on this album. So it's a good problem to have for me.
Sure.
What did you think about Don't Start Me to Talkin'? It's another cover written by Sonny Boy Williamson, who's a legendary blues harmonica player. I know you're a big fan of the harmonica.
I am a big fan of the harmonica.
Too bad there's not really any harmonica on the song. But it was written by harmonica player, so that's got to count for something, right?
Not really.
No, I know.
They're doing that thing again, though, on this one where they sound a little far away from the microphone at times. There's more ebb and flow in this one than there was back on Mama Loey, but it's still, and I think some of it is the instruments help more on this one than they did on Mama Loey, but that vocal choice is present again, and I'm not the biggest fan.
I think in Mama Loey's a stylistic choice. I mean, in this one it is too, but I think in this one, I mean, if you talk about they sound far away from the mic or fade off at the end of phrases, I think it makes it sound kind of like a live performance. Like they're dancing along with it, you know, on stage.
Yeah, you're right. It kind of does sound live performance-y, and you know how I feel about live albums.
Yeah, I guess. The original song, and by original, I mean Williamson's original version, peaked at number 3 on the U.S. R&B charts way back in 1955. The recording notably features another blues legend, Muddy Waters, on the guitar.
Yeah, sorry, I gotta go back again. Again, I've brought it up on the podcast before, but I'm really just not a concert guy.
Oh, no, I guess not.
Like, you have to be a really special artist or band that I would like for me to want to go to your concert. Like, we went to the Elton John concert together.
Yeah.
That was awesome. I had a really good time. That was cool. I still think a lot of the performances he gave were worse than the versions of the songs I'm used to.
Well, yeah, but...
But, like, it was worth it because he's such an iconic performer and, like... But, like, the majority of... Like, you go to a crap ton of concerts every year.
I try.
For bands that, like, are okay. Heck, you sometimes go to bands you haven't even heard of.
Yeah, sometimes.
Just because you could get cheap tickets and had nothing better to do. I would never do that. Like, that's just not me. I'm just... Like, Billy Joel and Journey are ones on my list that I would love to see, right?
Mm-hmm.
But like... Other than some of those bigger powerhouses, most people, I'm content just listening to the songs you've put out.
Well, that's Don't Start Me to Talking. That's what they've put out.
Yeah, and they made it sound like I was there listening to them in person, which I didn't want to do.
Okay. Well, man, I'm sorry they started you to talking.
You ready for some doo-doos?
Oh, yeah. Are you talking about the vocal parts on Jesus Is Just All Right With Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of doo-doo. A lot of doo-doo on this one.
This song actually made some people think that they were evangelists.
Yes, it did. The band isn't really religious. They're not very religious at all. And they have a drug-inspired name. But yeah, this song started to make the rounds in religious communities. So much so that the Christian hip-hop group DC Talk even covered it in the 1990s. Which is interesting. You'd never expect the Doobie Brothers to be a band with any songs popular amongst the religious crowd in the 1970s, you know?
Yeah, that is kind of silly. I don't know, I really like this song as well, but the covers, I'm limited on my top three picks this week.
You are. You took an extra.
I took an extra last week. And so the covers are good, but there's also their original stuff is good enough. I almost feel bad picking the covers over their original stuff.
Yeah, that's fair, but I don't think anyone would fault you if you took, I mean, especially this of all the covers. Jesus Is Just All Right With Me.
Do you think this is the best cover?
Quite possibly, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, this is a cover that, like I said earlier in the episode, the Doobies took this and ran with it. They usurped the original in popularity. The original version came out in 1966 on the Art Reynolds Singers record, Telling It Like It Is. The Byrds also covered it in 1969, and their version is what inspired the Doobie Brothers. The Doobie Brothers actually based their arrangement very heavily off the Byrds, but, and maybe this will sway you on picking it versus an original, the Doobie Brothers did make some notable changes. One difference is the bridge, the slowed down Jesus Is My Friend part. The band added that themselves. So they did make some alterations to like the traditional and previous releases. You know, it wasn't a straight up cover. They kind of made it their own, even from the Byrds version that they emulated.
The other problem I have with this song is it gets a little repetitive.
Yeah, it's the second longest song on the album. So I get why it feels that way, especially surrounded by tracks that aren't even 3 minutes. But it's good repetitive. And that's honestly part of the reason they did add that bridge, was to break up the repetitivity of it. But even still, I think it's really good repetitive. And so does the rest of the world. You know, for the Doobies, it was their second single from Toulouse Street, and it peaked at number 35 on the Hot 100. So it's another top 40 hit.
Fair enough.
Yeah, maybe I'm biased because it was one of the ones on the original Greatest Hits album that I had and fell in love with. So that could be part of it. What do you think about the slang term just all right? It kind of doesn't make sense. It's like an ironic understatement. Because if you're saying in the 1970s, well, really the term is from the 60s. If you're saying something's just all right, that means it's like groovy, like cool. But like just kind of feels like it diminishes it.
It kind of does feel like it diminishes, yeah.
It's like, do you like that? It's just all right. But it's not meant that way. It's meant like that is just all right. Like that's it. That's the stuff. It's backwards. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know a sneaky song from this album that I always like more than I think I do? White Sun.
Yes. Especially that And I Slip Away. The way they hit Away. So good.
Yeah. White Sun is a beautiful track written and sung by Tom Johnston. Another kind of different song structure. That's one thing they do very well is they vary. You know, it's never just a verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, chorus. You know what I mean? They like to mix it up a lot, especially on the back half of this album. But White Sun is beautiful. The melody is excellent. The minimal, like, guitar accompaniment is really, really special. Like, they don't add many more instruments than just strings, and I like that a lot. I think it gives them a chance to highlight even further their vocal harmonies and what the melody's doing. The song doesn't need any more than it has. And it's interesting that it kind of maintains the same four chords on repeat the whole time, but never gets old. Because they're just so interesting.
I don't even think I noticed.
No, you don't. That's what I mean. Like, White Sun is one that could definitely edge out Cottonmouth for a top five spot. My biggest complaint about White Sun is that it's so short. But boy, do I not have that complaint about Disciple.
6 minutes, 44 seconds.
It's, yeah, a 7-minute track to close out the second side of this record almost is quite a long one. It's kind of got the same vibes. I mean, we've abandoned them for a while through this middle part of the album, but it kind of takes us back to Rockin' Down the Highway and that kind of style. I guess we got a little bit of it on Don't Start Me to Talkin', but Disciple feels like a real return to form.
The guitar on this one, that ba-dum, bum, ba-bum, bum, is good until I've heard it for like the 90th time 4 minutes into this song.
Yeah.
I get a little done with it.
I can't fault you for thinking this one's a bit much. And this one, Disciple's like good, but I don't think Disciple has any like standout memorable moments like almost all the other tracks on this album.
Yeah.
That's the unfortunate part about it. But you're right, the guitar part is great. Tom Johnston sings great.
And this is almost one that at times in the song, not always, sometimes it's very in your face, but you know, it's long enough, it can be both at various times.
Yeah.
At times it feels like the instrumentalists walk across the room from the microphone, you know? Like, sure. At certain points, I'm like, what the heck happened to the instruments here? Why did it get so quiet?
Yeah, but it's not like quiet, like dynamics changing.
No.
It's quiet, like volumes changing.
Right. Like, it still sounds like they're playing with the same, like, intensity and sound, but something has happened to the volume on my headset.
Somebody slipped the fader down a little bit when you weren't looking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just don't know why they keep doing that.
Well, that is the thing I think that's kind of unique to, if not just their earlier albums, maybe to Loose Street in particular. It's not a thing I notice a lot on something like, I don't know, China Grove or anything on Minute by Minute. Like that,
sure.
That's not a staple. It's not a constant in the Doobie Brothers discography. But yeah, To Loose Street does kind of suffer from that a little bit. I don't know. It's just an interesting track. It's two verses. It's 7 minutes long.
Yeah.
And it's just got two giant verses kind of thrown at it. I don't know. I think all these deviations from kind of a standard form help keep you on your toes. You never know what the Doobie Brothers are going to do next. Is it a chorus? Is it another verse? Is it a guitar solo? Is it a flute? Like, there's a lot of variation, which is nice. But I think Disciple does kind of squander it by sticking to that same guitar riff 90 times. And then the album wraps up with the bite-sized track.
Hiss, hiss. Hiss, hiss.
Snake Man.
I'm a snake man. Hiss, hiss.
Yeah. Snake Man, it's almost like a little outro. Tom Johnston wrote and sang this one. It's just bite-sized. It's got this threatening, bizarre, natural imagery. You know, the Snake Man, the Black Eagle. It's ominous. It's foreboding. Like, he can't or won't even go outside beyond his mailbox just out of straight-up fear. It's a very different place than we started the album with the upbeat, happy, listen to the music, world peace. Suddenly, we're on a lot smaller scale. We're confined in a small space. We're paranoid and afraid. There's danger. It's a really interesting tonal shift.
Yeah.
But again, one of the best guitar songs on the album, I think. Just in terms of, like, it does a lot with a little.
Okay, yeah. There's also there's a vocal rhythm and note choice that kept reminding me of another song, and I couldn't shake it once I heard it.
Okay.
The Snake Man's on my trail. That part?
Yeah.
Sounds very similar to the walk down structure of Shore Plays a Mean Pinball.
Darn it. Wow.
Every time I was like, what the heck?
Yeah, that's straight out of Tommy. Oh my goodness. Yeah, and Tommy came first. You're right, that does feel exactly like Pinball Wizard. Interesting. Wow, thanks.
You're welcome. I'm here for these beautiful insights that fracture the way you view songs forever.
That one. Yeah, that one might mess me up a little bit. I might never get over that one. Like, some of them I said I could look past it. Like, when you said the one on Motley Crue sounded like Walk This Way, right? That's fine. Mm-hmm. It does kind of sound like it, but...
Or
it,
how, like, I had the Creep. Like, last week, I thought the one sounded like Creep.
Yeah, or the Creep thing last week.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not going to, like, ruin or be a permanent association in my head. I think that one is. But let's get into Final Spin. Again, I'm curious about your thoughts for this, because, I don't know, I had a lot of thoughts behind this and Minute by Minute and just why I went with what I did, but I think
you tried to dive into my mind and you may have gotten lost.
I don't know. I think this album is great. A lot of hits, kind of a breakout record that shows a lot of the Doobies' potential, but also like what made them famous in the first place. I think Minute by Minute maybe is a little more static, a little less variation from song to song, while To Loose Street obviously covers a lot more ground between like Caribbean rhythms and flutes and cover songs of blues classics and vocal harmony on White Sun. Like, I think there's a lot of variety on To Loose Street. It just puts us in this world very gradually, but very thoroughly. And I think that's really cool. To Loose Street's a lot more subtle of an album than Minute by Minute, which kind of throws you in the deep end right away. So I think To Loose Street's a really great jumping off point for the rest of their discography in a way that future albums maybe aren't.
But you're thinking you picked wrong. You think I'd like Minute by Minute more?
Yeah, I might. We'll have to figure it out once I hear your score for sure, but we'll see. For me, musically, this album gets an 85. It's obviously got some big, big hits, but then some like deep, deep cuts too. And that's, I think, mostly just a music thing. I'm giving music an 85. Lyrically, 84. It's fine. It doesn't, I think, break any new ground lyrically, but it is good enough to support its own weight. Instruments of production, 87. So much great instrumental talent in this band, and they're only just getting started. The production, yeah, I think you're right, leaves a little bit to be desired, just in the stylistic choices they make sometimes. This album has a particular feel to it, but overall, I'm giving it a vibe score of 91 because it's just fun. It's a shorter album. It's pretty consistent and strong and not bad. You know, it's an easy listen for me. Maybe it's just the vocal harmonies that bias me towards that. I don't know. Either way, there are enough songs that aren't covers to earn it a bonus point, and so its overall score is an 87.1 for Toulouse Street.
Putting it somewhere around like 200?
As a matter of fact, puts it at number 199.
Boom!
Mm-hmm.
I know about where things are based on your score.
Yeah, that puts it just below Kid Cudi, and actually very, very close to and right above Kaleo, Fleetwood Mac, really? And Tina Turner. Yeah.
That's interesting because, you know, I put Kid Cudi with a 1.
You did.
But I put Kaleo all the way up at a freaking 9. So my score could go anywhere between a 1 and a 9.
Yeah, it could. And I'm really curious to see where it does land.
For me?
Was this a Toulouse Street or was this a Towin Street?
How's that the first time we made that joke?
I don't know. I just thought of it.
For me, the Doobie Brothers are forgettable.
Ouch.
I know. I think they're a good classic example of classic rock.
Yeah.
Especially the more country-leaning tendencies of some classic rock. They're a good representation of that. I mean, just looking at their Spotify hits, right? They said they've got their top fives are all spread out across different albums.
Yeah.
And, like, only listen to the music cracks half a million. Whereas, like, some of these other classic rock artists perform better on Spotify, which is a newer app, and have albums that are way more memorable with multiple big giant hits off of them, right?
I mean, this one's got two and a half or three.
I just feel like if I'm naming classic rock artists and bands, Doobie Brothers is gonna be so far down on the list of people I name.
Maybe it's because you don't know how much you know by them. And you don't know who sings your favorite songs.
Yeah, well, yeah, but I mean, a lot of the ones that are truly my favorites, I've learned. You think I knew who Journey was when I first started in my classic rock journey?
You should have.
But, you know, I learned and they've become one of my favorite bands.
Yeah, sure. Forgettable was your adjective. That's wild.
It's just,
I mean, I acknowledge that they're never the rock band. They're never at the forefront of what popular music was doing.
But that being said, what they do have is good, right? It's great. I liked it. It was a good album.
Yeah.
But was it a memorable album? Am I gonna, a year from now, remember any of the songs that were on it again? If you, you know, like, am I gonna forget what I listened to?
Fair.
And I don't know if I will. It'll be one of those things that I think when I'm listening to the favorite songs playlist and one of their songs comes up, I go, oh man, I remember this. Why did I score this album blank?
Yeah.
And then I'll go re-listen to the album, be like, oh, that's why I scored it that. Okay. All that being said, though, for a score, I'm giving this one 8 Scooby Dooby Doos out of 10. Why is that my unit? Well, it's a mystery.
Yeah, maybe it will be. 8 is actually kind of on par, high on par for where I thought you put this. I kind of thought this might verge down into 7s.
I thought about it, but I think it comes back to that. What I'm about to say, I don't want you to misinterpret, but I'll say it anyways. I think some of that has to do with looking at the staying power of the album, okay? That's not to say everything below where I'm putting it doesn't have any staying power.
Right, that could just be a worse album that stays better.
Right, exactly, right? So I think this album, if it stayed better, had 9 potential, and you know, the stuff that it did beat out, even though it wasn't staying, it beat out just because if I were to listen to this over and over and like memorize it, it would forever be better in my mind than the stuff I remember.
Yeah.
It is getting a low 8, though. Going all the way down to the bottom, below Pentatonix.
Ooh.
And it's Whip Skimpers.
Bottom of the eights. So that is exactly kind of where I windowed it, I guess. Fair enough.
My top 3 in album order. Hey, listen to the music.
Hey, listen to the music.
I don't know. I just felt like saying, I don't know. You I felt like just saying listen to the music wasn't good enough.
Hey, hey. You just talked about the whoa-ohs. Yeah, they gave you the perfect lead-in.
Yeah, I didn't feel like, oh, whoa-in.
Hey, listen to the music. Really didn't have staying power for you, did it? Good grief.
I just didn't want to say, oh, whoa. I didn't have the energy for an oh whoa right there, so I went hey.
Hey, okay. Hey, listen to the music.
Toulouse Street.
Ooh, snub for Rocking Down the Highway.
Yeah, I wanted to give it to it, but there was some other stuff that I didn't know that I found was better.
Okay, that's good.
And White Sun.
Ooh, that's a sleeper pick. I like it.
Sleeper pick. And again, I get no honorable mention. Nope. Because I was greedy last week. I'd love to tell you what it was, but can't seem to get the words to come out. It's trying to speak, but nothing's coming out. My throat's too
dry.
My mouth's too dry.
Okay.
Can't get the words out.
Sure. Well, what are you taking for the playlist out of those three?
I mean, we got to take listen to the music, right? Can we agree on that? What are you thinking for the other one? I don't know what you were thinking. I can get a good read on what you were going to pick.
Yeah, I know.
But I think listen to the music has to go onto the playlist.
It does. I'm kind of partial to the basic Rocking Down the Highway.
I know that one. I like that one.
I could also be talked into White Sun. No, you know what? It's Disciple. There's no debate.
Excuse you?
No, I'm just kidding. I could be talked into White Sun. I could be talked into Cottonmouth, maybe. I could be talked into Rocking Down the Highway.
I'm down, honestly, for any of those three. I mean, Cottonmouth has the great horns, which I think shows a fun side to their sound that Listen to the Music doesn't. White Sun, as we said, was a sleeper pick. I think Rocking Down the Highway is the closest to Listen to the Music. So if you want two things that go well together, you can pick that one.
I think I'm going to lean towards White Sun. It shows off their vocal harmony in a really interesting way.
Sure.
It's an original. It's a cool...
That was both of our biggest compliment to them.
And it's a song that I think is maybe a deeper cut. It feels more like my favorite, something I liked a lot.
Sure.
Instead of Rocking on the Highway that I maybe just like because it's popular. But it's also good, you know.
I like it. White Sun and Listen to the Music.
Yeah. I just want to reaffirm, I think I am 100% backwards on this. We're going to do a backtrack and figure it out because...
Oh, you think I'm going to like minute by minute more?
If you're talking about staying power, I think nearly track for track, minute by minute has more staying power. I mean, every song kind of has every song on this beat in a lot of ways, with the exception of like Listen to the Music and Rocking Down the Highway maybe. But we'll have to figure it out. I knew it. I don't know. We'll see. That'll pop up right in your podcast feed. Keep an eye out. You can also find us on social media at Spin It Pod on X and Twitch, at Spin It Pod Official on Instagram, and of course on the web at www.spinitpod.com. That's pod with a P-O-D, not pud with a U. Don't do that. That won't take you to us.
Yeah, that won't get you there yet until we get that domain locked.
Sure. Yeah. Stay tuned next week for another exciting album and find out what we think about it. Make sure to rate, like, subscribe, do all the fun things. Tell a friend.
Tell a friend who you think is most like a giant children's show bee.
I don't know if I have a friend who's even remotely like a giant children's show bee.
Oh, I've got at least five.
Whoa. Imagine getting compared to a giant bee. That would sting. Anyway, we'll see you next week. Have a great week. And until then, keep
spinning. So you have Scooby-Doo, right? Everybody knows and loves Scooby-Doo. Then you got his siblings, Ruby-Doo, Howdy-Doo, Skippy-Doo, and Yabba-Doo, I believe. But then, of course, Ruby-Doo has a son, Scrappy-Doo. That's where Scrappy-Doo comes from. Of course, their parents were Momsy-Doo and Dada-Doo. Then you got Grandpa-Doo. Then you got Great-Grandpa-Doo. And then you got Yankee-Doodle-Doo, who is like top of the family tree. Then, of course, Grandpa-Doo, who had Dada-Doo. Also, Dada-Doo had some siblings, Uncle Horton-Doo, and an unknown sibling, the one blank on the Scooby-Doo family tree. We know this mysterious brother or sister of Uncle Horton-Doo and Dada-Doo had three kids called Dooby-Doo, Dixie-Doo, and Scooby-Dee, which I remember seeing Scooby-Dee. And then, of course, Uncle Horton, who's the one that had Whoopsie-Doo and Scooby-Dum. It's only one unknown link in the Scooby-Doo family crew. I think the Spin It Mystery Department are probably the best detectives for the case.